Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, TheDorkForest.com, DorkForest.com, and of course, FamilyPetAncestry.com, because I thought it was funny. Anyway, you know the credits. Mike Rickberg composed the intro song to The Dork Forest. He sang it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. He's good people. Now, he will sing again at the end, the Mexican Hat Dance, lyrics he made up himself. Patrick Brady fixes this audio. He does vital work, and I thank him for it. And Vilmos is the guy who does my website. So if you go to Hired Gun? I think it's Hired Gun. And it's in the notes. His website. He could do your website for you, is what I'm saying. So, it is November. And in November and December, I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest. You can donate any other month. Or if you do donate, if you want to donate this month, and some people have, just don't forget that you should be donating to a food bank. And if you were thinking about donating to the Dork Forest, you could take that money and donate to a food bank. I'm okay with that. What you do is you go on the internet and you Google the name of your town, and then you Google the word with the name of your town, space, food bank. And then it comes up because there's a food bank in every town. And then you give them the $100 you were going to give me, because I like the idea of everyone giving me $100 a year or $10 a month or $8.33 a month if you're going to do it through November and December. But it's November. It's December. These are some holiday times, and it would be nice to have people have food. Anyway, if you want to support the Dork Forest, you can always, it's going to be the holiday season, you can get them a Dork Forest t-shirt. Go to the merch page on JackieCation.com and order yourself a Ranger t-shirt, a Dork Forest t-shirt. Ranger t-shirt by Salmon Beemel Benrude, my nephew. Ranger t-shirt by Brett Chambers out of Portland, Oregon. Just saw him the other day. Or you can get my new DVD. This will make an excellent Horcrux, also available in CD form, also available online for about $8 or $9. But you can buy a hard copy if you like. I will sign it if you'd like me to. And you can get all that as presents. You can get it just to get it. And then when you order from Amazon, and we all do, there's a banner on JackieCation.com, a white strip that says support the show by ordering from Amazon. If you just go through there, it's a portal to Amazon, and you make your order, I get a percentage. I get a little kickback. So that is harmless as well. Now, there's an ad this month, and it's going to play in a heartbeat, and it's Bob Calhoun's book, and it's a good one. And other than that, I have shows, because this is a bonus episode. I will tell you about the shows November 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. On the 8th, I'm in Santa Barbara. More information on my Twitter feed at Jackie Cation. You can always email me, by the way, jackie@jackiecation.com. On the 9th, I'm in Magicopolis down in Los Angeles, where I'm doing a benefit for Jake Johansson's child's public school. Yeah, there's all kinds of problems with that, but I'm glad to help. So if you're down Santa Monica-wise, come to Magicopolis on November 9th and support that event. And the 10th is a Monday. I'm doing the Hot Tub Show with Kurt Braunohler and Kristen Scholl. And the 11th, I am doing a character, an HR lady, for the Y2K Awareness Program. It's set in 1999. So those are the programs. You can see my entire calendar on JackieCation.com. Let's get into it. Let's do the ad, and then let's get into the show. Thanks for listening. Shattering conventions, shattering conventions, shattering. Shattering. Hey, I sang. It's Jackie Cation. Shattering conventions, commerce, cosplay, and conflict on the expo floor by Bob Calhoun is this month's sponsor. It's a hilarious and disturbing book. Friend of the show, conventions dork Bob Calhoun, has been on the show previous episode. He goes to all kinds of different conventions, trade shows, and expos and writes about it in Shattering Conventions. But he doesn't just go to Comic-Con and Star Trek conventions. He goes to a gun show, a livestock show, a Republican convention, a conspiracy convention. I remember being slightly worried when he went to that one. And even a Bigfoot Hunter Con. There's all kinds of crazy and wrong in this book, and it's not always where you expect to find it. Not only have I read this book, I endorsed it with a blurb on the back cover, and I recommend it to all Rangers of the Dork Forest and spooky reading girls within the sound of my voice. The book is Shattering Conventions, Commerce, Cosplay, and Conflict on the expo floor by Bob Calhoun. It's available in ebook and paperback from Amazon.com and other fine booksellers. For more on the book, go to shatteringconventions.com. It's a really good book. You should get it. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I am in my living room, and we're the proud purveyors of Dork Foresting. So with me is I am a fan of Mr. Jared Logan, New York comedian, jaredlogan.com, at Jared Logan on Twitter, and some heavy breathing. I can hear you.
Am I huffing? Yeah.
You're huffing and puffing.
My father always used to do that. You could always tell when he was in the room. He's like,
and you have a new CD out called My Brave Battle.
Yes.
Available on iTunes, and probably if they go to jaredlogan.com, they can find all.
They can find everything. Amazon, it's on that.
Do you have a podcast?
I don't. I should.
Yeah. Everybody else does. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly. Look for that. I could probably get it started up. I think next week's probably.
Oh yeah, that's how easy it is. Quite honestly,
you actually could, right?
Right, just tomorrow. All of a sudden, Libsyn will sell you some online cloud space or whatever.
Who does yours? I'll do that person too.
Libsyn. I do Libsyn.
Libsyn. Okay.
Yep. $20 a month, and they're very nice. They put it on iTunes for you. You just upload it. You put your little documentation down there. You can upload a photo. They will even make an app for you. I have an app that some people have purchased, and God bless them.
Yeah.
Because there's a small bonus thing that I do that my husband and I talk about the show for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He goes, how was the show? And I tell him, and then we comments on whatever the person's dorkdom was, and that's 2 minutes. And it used to be only available on the app, the APP, as Maria Bamford's mom likes to call it. but it turns out Libsyn has just started posting it.
Oh, okay.
Right, for free.
Hey, you're like, hey, that's bonus content.
Right. Well, bonus. Here's the bonus thing. You got to go to tdf.libsyn.com and scroll down to the bottom, and it says, here's the episode for download. Here's the bonus for download.
Okay.
So you can do that. If you don't have the app, knock yourselves out, Americans, Rangers, Rangers of the Dork Forest.
Everybody can get it. Everybody. That's good. That's for Dork Forest dorks.
Right. Extra Dork Forest dorks. Yeah. Super fun. Jared Logan, yes. I'm an admirer of your work.
I love your work, Jackie. Thank you for saying that. Thank you.
It's really super fun. If you get a chance to see Jared Logan doing the stand-up comedy, talking out of his joke hole, do it. Do it. But here's what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
Renaissance history, medieval history.
Renaissance and medieval history. I love
it. What came first?
In chronological order, the medieval era came first.
The Dark Ages, Renaissance.
They really are the same, really. You know, when the Renaissance is just like kind of a movement that happened inside of, you know, the Middle Ages.
Sure.
And then before you knew it, we had the modern era, is what they call it. Late 1500s, 1600s. Modern, if you can believe that.
Oh, interesting. Somebody's really old to think that that's just the, like, oh no, I was a kid back in the 1500s.
And then we were modern. That's when it happened. It's January 1st, 1600.
Right. Remember what happened in 1599?
Right.
That was Spanish Armada? What was that?
Ah, geez. That was 1582.
Was it?
Oh, okay. Now see, here's the thing. People are going to challenge my dorkdom and they're going to defeat me.
They're
going to
win.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Great opportunity for a guy like Todd Mason to just shout at his iPod now. That'll be great. He's a ranger.
Yeah.
And he knows things. That guy,
yeah.
There's a lot of people out there, a lot of rangers, got a lot of info. They are classic dorks of the Ranger of the Dork Forest kind of genre. Much like all of us, where we have just a lot of information that, and now you're going to be put on the spot. So what do you love about the Middle Ages?
I really, really like the actual history of it. You know, I like a lot of dorks, I grew up reading, you know, fantasy, epic fantasy.
Oh, right.
And still do, and still love it. But then you find the source material, and it's almost even more fun. I also, by the way, am a fan of horror.
Oh,
and I like any kind of story that's very dark and kind of sad. I like sad endings. And
really?
The medieval era is full of just sad, dark, supremely effed up stuff that happened over
just
and over.
One sad sack story after another. About what about Roland? The Song of Roland.
Yeah, that's
I read
good.
A child's version of that when I was in junior high. Sobbed. I tell you, the horn, nobody came.
Oh, gosh.
The horn, nobody fucking came.
Yeah, and there's
rise to the
amazing
occasion.
Homage to that in The Unwritten. If you've read The Unwritten
the
by
comic
Mike,
book,
Carey.
Mike Carey,
yeah.
There is.
So they work that in, but Yeah, Song of Roland. Wow. Yeah, I'm also one of these people who always will buy, like, you said you read a children's version.
Yes.
I'll like buy like the Song of Roland at
right,
Barnes
in
and
French.
Noble.
No, but translated.
Translated, and then I'll be like, I'm reading the Song of Roland. Here I go. I'm going to read the Song of Roland, and then I'll read like you know a little ways into it, and I'll be like, I might not be reading the Song of Roland.
We're the same person. I tried to read Don Quixote, and it's a great book. It is genuinely, and that was, I believe, one of the very first novels I was told.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it is 500 pages, and it is good. It is good. I read probably 90, 95 pages. You would have thought I would have been in. But it turns out, it's funny, like Gargantua and Pantagruel
yes.
funny, kind of mm-hmm. Balzac, and you're like, oh, this prose is far too well written for me to be able to finish this.
It's a very different frame of mind than the frame of mind that we have. When you talk about Idiocracy, like the Mike Judge film, and yeah. how in the future all they can watch is like Whoops, I Farted shows.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you and I
don't want to be that guy.
I don't either. And I don't think it makes us stupider, but it definitely means that our brains and how we take in information have changed.
Right.
I bought Sir Thomas Malory's.
Oh, yeah.
The entire Arthur, the La Morte de Arthur.
Oh,
I bought two volumes of it.
Yep.
It literally has no story. It's like, and then they went here, and then these people fought these people, and this person was killed, and this person escaped, and then they went here, and then this person was.
So there's no exposition. It's all just facts.
It's essentially a liturgy. It is a liturgy. Yes, it is a liturgy. They just recorded what quote happened unquote to King Arthur.
Right.
Kind of cool to have. You know what's cool with books like that?
Yeah.
Maybe you can't read it front to back, but you crack it open and you always find some kind of weird gem just there in the middle
on the
page.
Right, a couple of paragraphs where you're like,
yeah.
I think, and I'm probably going to say it wrong, it's Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, or Gawain. Gawain and the Green Knight, however it's pronounced. And I ended up powering through that. Granted, it is 110 pages. So it had that going for it.
Sure.
And, but I really wanted to read the original of that because it had been referred to so many times when you read Tolkien or I have a stack of books that's ridiculous, right? We all have a stack of books.
Sure.
And some of them are what I call smart books. And they're called that because when I was a child, my stepmother was a hairdresser, and she said, man, there's a new idiot working at work one day. She comes home, she's like, this woman is not smart. And I was reading, and she was like, oh, you're reading a smart book. And it was like The Winds of War. I mean, it was not,
yeah.
It was like John Jakes.
Yeah.
It was a historical fiction
yeah.
book. And she's like, oh, you read those smart books. And I was like, so when I thought about, we would make fun of it for years. And what made me laugh about it was I was like, because there are smart books. There's mm-hmm. books that, like, if you look over there, these are my books I have on display.
Yeah.
These are the books like Ovid's Metamorphoses.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are the decent books.
But that's another one. Crack it open and you'll find something in the middle that's just mind-blowing.
Right.
Read it cover to cover. You're amazing.
Right.
Like,
and,
I'm impressed.
Let there be a class, you know? I mean,
yeah.
that's when I read Ovid, or however one would pronounce it correctly. But I read it in class.
Yeah.
And that's when that's the one time I finished the Silmarillion, was I had a class on it.
Yeah.
And So medieval history, did you study it in school, or do you just read a lot of historical?
You know, that's another thing that I missed that. I don't know where I was going to school. They just never really got into it. You maybe had like a chapter, like one Tuesday, they talked about it, and then that was it. So I really do study it on my own now. I read popular histories. I don't read, you know, scholarly articles.
Yeah.
But I find that the popular histories are fantastic. Right now I'm reading Thomas Asperge's The First Crusade.
Okay.
Which is about the First Crusade.
Okay.
And I'm about 200
pages in. And it's a nonfiction popular. It's
all just nonfiction.
And it's a history.
Popular in that it's readable, right? You
okay.
know, I mean, I would say that's the only.
That's the way to go.
Compromise it makes. And it is a harrowing tale.
Of the First Crusade.
Of the First Crusade and how it came about and why
it came
about.
Why did it come
about?
Yeah,
it's crazy, right? Like, that's the one he opens by going, why would they do this? Why would all these people who had lived in Europe, who had never been 100 miles away from home,
right.
why would they go, you know what, we're going to walk, because they didn't ride the whole way, 3,000 miles.
To Jerusalem.
To Jerusalem and kill a bunch of people we've never met, never had any... There was no... People try to say that, you know, he makes the case that people now try to say that there was tension between Islam and Christianity back then. There was not. In fact, over where the Muslims lived, Christians and Jews were allowed to live in total relative peace with them. Like in the same cities.
Right.
All the
time.
Side
by side.
What it was is the Pope, he was like... He was mad because he didn't have any power anymore. The Pope had that the office of Pope had
what
been more powerful. We're in 1095, I think, when he calls it.
Okay.
No, when he calls the crusade. It's
okay.
1095.
Pope calls it. Pope says, right.
Yes. He did this because.
Which Pope? Any idea?
This was Urban.
Okay.
I think Urban III. I'd have to, yeah, I have to look in my book. And the guy before him was a guy named Pope Gregory, who was like, screw this. The Pope is awesome. I'm going to have my own army. Everybody has to do what I say. I rule Europe.
Okay.
Because I'm the Pope, and I tell you what God says, and God is the boss.
Right.
And everybody was like, not so much, Gregory. You can't boss us around. You're no longer... They just decided he wasn't Pope anymore.
Oh, God.
And so his eventual successor, this guy Urban, was like, crap, I want to be super powerful and rule the world like Cobra Commander as well. But Gregory was a dummy. He did it in a real dumb, like obvious, like boneheaded way.
Right.
How can I do this like real slick to where people submit to my rule?
The Karl Rove of popes.
Totally. Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. The power behind the power. So he's like, okay, they're not going to let me have my own Pope army.
Right.
So I'll just tell them that if they all go and attack these Islamic people, then all of their sins are forgiven, and
wow,
and so he didn't really understand what a can of worms he was opening, and whoop ass,
holy crap,
yeah.
And so he said, "All right, we're starting a crusade, a la a jihad per se." One might
totally,
also,
and I don't think he didn't that, like the book makes the case that he didn't really know how many people would go.
Right.
Like, he
how
thought
many
it might be like
went?
a couple hundred. Oh God, I don't want to get my number
thousands?
Wrong, but I think it was 60,000.
Oh shit!
And he was like, "What about da? Oh what? God."
Okay.
Yeah.
And did he have to arm them or did he have to do anything?
No. So that's the other thing is like these guys were so ready to go because if you were a noble in like medieval England, your job was to sit around and practice with your sword all day. And you had all this expensive stuff that everybody made you buy. Like you're like, you got to have armor. And you're like, why? I'm sitting on my ass.
Right.
Like, what do I do with all this stuff? So they started fighting each other a lot in Europe.
Okay.
And that became kind of an endemic problem. Well, that was a safe way to do it. And in fact, that didn't come along till someone had a bright idea later, like in the 1300s.
Oh, we're going to bleed off all of this energy by having tournaments.
Right. Yeah,
okay.
A little bit. We'll kind of bleed off some of this energy. But even like in the, you know, the 11th century here, like they're sports, right?
Yeah.
Like, but they just kill each other in the sports. You know that, right?
In the sport, they're just like, oh, we'll actually be dying.
Yeah. There's like, I read this book called A World Lit Only by Fire. Which is fantastic. You got to get it. I believe the author is William Manchester.
Okay.
Anyway, he talks about there were like these sporting events where, you know, 28 people would just be slaughtered in like the middle of the match.
Wow.
And everybody was like, that was a fun.
That was really fun. Did you see how that one guy died?
That happened. Good festival, everybody. High five.
Good festival. That's the worst con ever.
Yeah, I'm not going.
Comic-Con.
I'm not signing on.
Right. So, okay, so the Pope doesn't pay for this.
Yeah.
He just says, all right, well, you guys are already armed.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to point you in the direction of what I want you to do.
Right, and he made the case that the Byzantines were having problems with Islam, which they were a little bit. The Byzantines, you know, they're the empire of Byzantium, Constantinople,
right. Mm-hmm.
And they are Christian, but mm-hmm. they have some ideological differences with the Western or Latin Christians, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like hanging out over there in Constantinople. They have very little in common with all these guys that are going on the crusade. But when they hear they're coming, they're like, the emperor, Alexius, is like, oh, I can use these guys. Well, I get a free army?
I get a free army
I'll do that.
Of Christians to kill these Persians that I don't like?
Yeah, and again, Islam wasn't giving them that much of a hard time. Like, they had taken over a bunch of territory from the Byzantines
I think the Armenians.
Like years and years ago.
I think the if I remember my Armenian history,
yeah.
which I have a little bit access to somewhere, somebody told me something, is that there was... There was some, you know, like there's always going to be fanatics.
Yeah.
So there were fanatical Islam who were like telling the Armenians that they had to be Muslim.
Yes.
And then the Armenians who were Christian. But really, I don't know if you know any Armenians. We're really the mellowest of all Christians. We're just like, no, we just want to sit together and have coffee and play backgammon.
Yeah.
Is that something?
And, well, and let crusaders into cities, because that's what they did when the crusaders got
yeah.
there.
Oh, I bet. That,
yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that we're just like, all right, well, if you're going to take care of this guy who's bossing us around, go for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
oh,
we
yeah.
will sell you swords and food, and it'll be fine.
That's exactly what happened. These guys got to these, like, yeah, these Middle Eastern cities, and the Armenians who were Christians were always like, here, psst, over here. Coming this way.
Did you need a towel?
Yeah.
Hey, let me sell you this towel and this pan for gold. And
we made breakfast for you. The Muslims are over there. So right. do what you will with that information.
Yeah, we're Christians. I know we look just like them, but you, it's over there.
Right.
Yeah, but I vaguely remember that. That's so crazy that the Pope called it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's so weird how all of these guys, a lot of them, went Colonel Kurtz when they got there. They just went completely like, and now I am my own nation.
Is that Apocalypse Now or is
Apocalypse
that...
Apocalypse Now. Well,
okay.
No, I'm talking about
John
the original
Conrad?
Novel. John Conrad, yes.
Did the Heart of Darkness?
Heart of Darkness.
Another sad sack book that Jared Logan really enjoys.
I love that book.
The horror.
So a lot of guys went over there. I forget the one guy's name, but there was a young guy who was like, screw your expedition, I'm going off on my own. And he just went south and just...
Into Africa?
No. I mean, you know, the main crusader army to get to Jerusalem had to take this big roundabout route. And then another
Germany?
Expedition went... No. This is after they've gotten like to the Levant or whatever.
Okay.
Like, So they had to go around all these mountains, and then this one guy's like, no, I'm going right through. I think the name of the area is called Cecilia, something like that. I'm sorry. But,
Sicily?
No, not Sicily.
Okay.
They'd already gotten to the Middle East. They'd
okay,
already
so
crossed
they
over
were
into
northern,
Turkey.
They were in Turkey. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he just broke off from everybody else and tried to start up his own nation all by himself without
Who's
the Pope backing him up. He was a young guy, something of Boulogne, I think Robert of Boulogne or
okay,
something like
some
that.
Some French dude?
Yeah, some French dude.
All right.
Yeah.
And how did that work out for him?
Not so good. I mean, first he took out his buddy who went with him. Him and this other army went.
Okay.
And then his buddy took over a city, and then he was like, I've got more people, and I'll kill you. So he immediately turned on his own comrade.
Weird.
And it was like, get out of the city. The city's mine. And his comrade was like, okay, dude, and like took off. And then he took over that city. And then, I mean, I'm in the middle of the book, so I'm still reading his story. But he really gets in bed with all of these people who want him to overthrow their leaders. And you know what happens when that kind of thing happens a lot of
blood
the time.
Bath.
A bloodbath. So.
Is that
like
what you love
leading
about
that way?
Right? Are you so? You've read A World Lit Only by Fire,
mm-hmm.
and this first Crusade book is what you're reading now,
right now.
And
yeah.
And those are all both Middle Ages.
Those are no. A World Lit Only by Fire is a great book. It's the Middle Ages and how it became the Renaissance. Right?
How did it become the Renaissance?
Well, yeah. Well. You know, another book that I read that really helps illustrate this too is The Swerve. Have you heard of The Swerve?
No.
The Swerve is by Stephen Greenblatt.
Okay.
And basically, it's about.
Does he have anything to do with our current deficit? Anyway, that's Greenspan.
Oh yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Go.
Mr. Greenblatt. Yeah.
The Swerve.
So you know, there were all these guys like in Europe when it was the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
And they kind of worked for the Pope. They were like secretaries. They knew how to write, right?
Okay.
They knew how to speak Latin very well.
Okay. Scribes.
Scribes. Yes. And they sort of had like this kind of like catty, like, you know, sort of jealous of each other culture.
Wow.
Sometimes a comedian culture might be similar. And in fact, one of the main guys in the book, The Swerve, one of his main works was a book of dirty jokes about the Vatican and the papacy.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I kid you not. So these guys would like...
The Pope walks into a bar.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, how many whores does the Pope... Whatever.
right.
Pardon my French. So these guys would like... they would, like, if they needed money or they were really desperate, they would go and search for scrolls that hadn't been seen in a long time.
Okay.
And in fact, this one guy in the book, really the main guy they follow, his pope gets deposed because this was always happening. I just told you about a pope hundreds of years earlier who had been deposed.
Right.
Well, his pope got deposed, and so he had no job. All of a sudden, he's without a job.
And, no sponsor.
No sponsor. New and you pope had to have like, a sponsor.
Right.
If you were just going to be a guy that's like, I can write on paper, and everybody else is like, we lift cattle and kill. What do you know?
Right. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah. So he would go and he would travel and he would very dangerous to travel at the time. And he would go way. He went way up into Germany and found these monasteries where that nobody had visited from the outside in like 500 years.
What?
Like they had been established during like the Gothic Wars during the fall of the Roman Empire.
Okay.
These Christian monasteries.
Yeah.
And in these monasteries, one of the things that the monks had to do was just copy scrolls all day. They were not supposed to read and understand the scrolls, Jackie.
Why not?
That was a sin.
What?
They were supposed to just keep copying things as like kind of a penance. And there's a lot of
Weird.
Evidence that some of these guys got kind of depressed.
Oh, right, because they weren't allowed to read them? That was the sin.
It started out like they would read and understand, and
yeah.
they would even add to them. And then over time, it stopped being that. It started being like reading and having a bunch of ideas and discussions in here is not allowed.
Oh,
you
right.
know?
Somebody got super bossy.
Someone got bossy.
Yeah.
It happened in a lot of them. So this guy would show up. He'd have to talk his way in. He's not a monk.
Right.
Right? He'd have to be really persuasive.
Super charming.
Yeah.
And to charm his way into a bunch of monks that haven't really talked to anyone non-German in 500 years.
Oh, yeah. And they don't want to. And you're an outsider.
And they're going to let you read their stuff?
Yeah. They're going to get stuff off the shelf that's been just sitting there for like hundreds of years for you.
And he did it?
Oh, he did it. And he found a lot of, like, finds. Like, and here's what's so crazy. Like, his thing wasn't like, so he found On the Nature of Things by Lucretius.
Okay.
Okay. On the Nature of Things is this, epic poem by Lucretius that is, like, totally humanist, totally pro-science. And in fact, it's an epic poem that's just filled with scientific theories. So it's got like, here's what atoms are. Like, it's like kind of where our idea of atoms comes from. And he did not care about, the guy that found it didn't care about any of that. He just was like, I found a rare one with great Latin. Like, he was like a Latin fan.
Oh, okay.
He was like a Latin dork. Yes. And so he got it out of the library. He made a bunch of copies.
Right.
He headed back to Europe, and he knew all these other Latin dorks.
Right.
And he was like, check it out.
Look what I found.
And he made his fortune off of that. He made his fortune.
Off
and,
of On the Nature of Things, the poem.
Yeah, and other finds.
And other finds like that.
He would be more excited about stuff that we've totally forgotten about because it's like, terrible, and there's like better examples of it, but it had immaculate Latin.
Right, it was just nailed it.
Yes.
Nailed the Latin.
Look at the calligraphy on this
one. Oh, right, and very pretty. Very, very pretty.
But even though he didn't care about the content, when people kept reading it, the content eventually slowly started seeping into people's heads.
Right.
And they don't even have an example in history, a document where someone was like, I have decided there are atoms and that, you know, God doesn't decide everything, that there are laws of science, you know, there's nothing like that. All you see is like a couple hundred years later, 70 years later, like there's different monasteries and churches that are like, anybody talking about atoms is in big trouble. So you just see people trying to silence it, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. I was told, and granted, I was told this by an Umberto Eco book, Name of the Rose. The only one I've finished. It's very sad.
I want to read that one really badly.
It's
I've
really
never read
good.
It.
Andy's read almost all of Umberto Eco because
he
loves that guy. But it's super dense. It's like Ian Banks. I don't know if you've read
Science
Fiction.
Yeah, I've read Ian Banks. Yeah.
Super dense. And I've read two Ian Banks books, but it's a commitment because they're very well thought out and they're incredibly often very dense, but they're wonderful. They're wonderful books. I do love them. And did you ever read
sure.
In Name of the Rose, there was some talk of Aristotle.
Yeah.
That was a big reveal.
Sure.
That was the big, like, people were like, oh, you can't read Aristotle, that's heresy.
Yeah.
Because Aristotle was talking about scientific theory as well, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was in a monastery. I bet you it was that monk who found it. Monk who'd be like, I need a couple of bucks. I'm going to go look for something rare.
Go find some nice Latin. You know what's a really cool idea I read? What? Is that, like Plato, you talk about Aristotle. Yeah. Let's talk about Plato for a second. Have you ever read The Republic?
Yeah.
And how the Republic is like, we will breed generations of men who we will teach them athletics. And then the ones that are good at that, we will, you know, the best of those, we will teach letters. And the best of those, we will teach, you know, and then that will be the philosopher kings who rule us.
Yeah.
Well, I read this book called The Story of Philosophy. And in it, they make the case that that's what the Middle Ages ended up being, is Plato's The Republic. Really, like when he talks about his philosopher kings, that's the clergy. Like,
oh, right. Weren't they?
Yeah. And in The Republic, they also talk about how we're going to make up a religion that will keep the peasants in line. And then our philosopher kings will write it and tweak it when they need to. And that's sort of what the Vatican.
What book was that?
It's The Story of Philosophy. What's the guy's name? Will something.
Nice work.
It's a great book. But it really, you really go, oh, crap. Like, so the ideas that Plato had all the way back then kind of slowly became
like
this, like
social urban planning kind of situation.
Yeah. And it's so weird that when he had the ideas, they were like dynamic and like rebellious. But by the time the Middle Ages came, they were like this horrible status quo. The oppressors were using those ideas. Yeah.
And why, I suppose, wouldn't they?
Sure.
Did you ever read A Canticle for Leibowitz?
I have not read A Canticle for Leibowitz.
It is, it's essentially, I mean, the tale is essentially how history repeats itself.
Yeah.
And it's about, it starts with the bomb, right? The end of the world. And Leibowitz is like the guy who invents the button. And so the world, there's nukes go off. The peasantry, you know, regular people are like, well, clearly it's the scientists' fault. We're going to kill all scientists. And then they're
sure.
like, now we're going to kill anyone who can read. And then so they kill everyone who can read. And then a couple of people who can read hide, like monks, and copy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're copying, like, grocery lists.
Sure.
Bullshit. They're like, we don't know what we're copying.
Us Magazine. Yeah.
Right. Until 500 years later. You know, and then they, and it's just, it's essentially it, the story, I forget who wrote A Canticle for Leibowitz offhand. It's an easy one. A lot of people have read it.
Yeah.
Look, Google it. You can do it, Rangers. You got it. But it's incredibly linear. And I mean, it's just, it's a snake eating itself because you're just like, oh, and it, nothing. And I read it when I was probably 20.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is when your mind is blown by any
sure.
Books. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, it's on every list I look up of science fiction.
Pretty easy read.
I've got to get it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's, the other one I read was Illusions, which isn't any science. It's all hippy skippy. It's the guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That guy blew my mind, too.
I kind of like that generation of writers, though, like Peter S. Spiegel, The Last Unicorn, man.
That's
like,
on the stack of crap that I literally have the stack. I'm like, I got to finish the Lord Dunsany book. I got to finish the Unicorn book.
Yeah.
But I also have the Red Shirts book. The Rangers have a book club.
Yeah.
And so that's on Goodreads. So go on Goodreads.
I'm going to go on there.
For Ranger of the Dark Forest book club. The first book they read was Ernie Klein's Ready Player One.
Oh,
was it.
I love that book.
That was a great book. Super fun, right?
Yeah.
And so, and then they're just finishing Red Shirts. And Red Shirts, super easy read. It's just essentially about being a red shirt, a Star Trek-y kind of
I know Scalzi because I've read, I read Old Man's War.
Oh, was that great?
Oh, it's dope.
All right.
It's so good.
All right, then.
Yeah.
But, so what, the Swerve is essentially talking about how the... What's the swerve mean?
The swerve.
Why do they call it?
Well, in the poem, there's a Greek word meaning swerve that kind of discusses how the world works. Kind of like, it, you know, we're all just atoms swerving into each other, bouncing off of each other, you know. And then also, you know, a big swerve happened when the poem was rediscovered, right? It caused a society to swerve.
Right. Okay.
And then, the Manchester book, The World Lit Only by Fire, you know, that's all about how things started slowly changing too. You know, it gets a lot into the Reformation, which was a huge part of it, you know.
Right. So what we're talking Middle Ages is Right. I don't have any of the dates.
I can kind of give you kind of a broad. Yeah. And people might disagree with me because everybody argues about this. You know, the Roman Empire fell, it's like 5th century, right?
Okay.
And then it was a very slow, protracted fall.
Yes.
And then
that's the 600s, right?
Yeah. And then you still have the Eastern Roman Empire. You still have Constantinople until 1453, right? And they almost say that the Middle Ages are kind of that period between when the Roman Empire fell and between Constantinople fell.
Okay.
1453, the Ottoman Turks take over Constantinople.
Right.
And they say that that's kind of like the end of the Middle Ages. And then the Renaissance really starts in earnest at that point. But that's arbitrary. People have their own, you know,
I'm
labels,
sure that,
you know.
Right. I'm sure that everybody has very specific dates and very specific because there's during the European Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, there was a Renaissance in Northern Europe, right?
Yeah.
The Library of Alexandria and do you ever read I can only speak in historical fiction. Allow me, have you ever read a Louis L'Amour book called The Walking Drum?
I haven't.
The Walking Drum is it's a very coming of age kind of story. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of, you know, a lot of fighting about a kid from like the British Isles who his father is a traitor. He has a ship and he sails around the world and his father goes missing. And, one of the neighbors is like, well, now I own his land cause you're 15.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I look over there. And he runs.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to go find my dad. And, if I don't find my dad, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I guess I'll eventually come back and kill that guy.
Yeah.
But so the walking drum is how he goes around the world and it's in that age.
That's really cool.
And it's Northern Europe.
I only know L'Amour from Western stuff.
Yeah. The Northern
that's
Africa
cool.
stuff is amazing, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Because while we were, you know, and there's some talk of Louis L'Amour going, you know, while you are, you know, living in a pigsty, there's a dude over in Casablanca who, you know, has perfume and is bathing and is healthy.
Islam's inventing like algebra, you know, while we're just banging swords
right,
the Western world.
Right. We're killing 28 guys at a festival.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, those 28 guys might have been, oh, geniuses. No, you don't care? Okay. I'm going to head back to Morocco. I'll be right back.
Was so cheap, but not in some of those civilized parts of the world. Yeah.
Right. It was super civilized in Northern Africa, but it is fascinating because you think about, like, the only other things I've read, you know, about the Middle Ages are all science fiction, you know, like the Doomsday Book. Connie Willis?
I have it. I haven't read it yet.
It's super dark.
Yeah. Oh, then I'll love it then.
You will love it. And there's another called Eiffelheim.
Eiffelheim. I like the sound of it.
It's about a German. It's about a German town. It's bookended by the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the future, like 2300s or whatever, there's a physicist and a middle age a professor of the Middle Ages, who are a couple. A man and woman, and she's a physicist and she has some theory about warp theory and he has some theory about this weird town in Germany in Eiffelheim during the Middle Ages where the Black Death came, the plague came, and nobody ever settled there again. And he's like, why? Everyone else in Germany was settled. Why did that never? And he has a theory that there were these strangers that came and he doesn't know what the hell it is. And so the entire middle of the book, which is the best part of the book, is shows us what happened in 1412 during the Black. I don't know when the Black Death was.
It would have been in the 1300s. Yeah.
Okay. And it was essentially, it's about the Reformation. It's about, the Black Plague. It's about tolerance and it's about, an alien ship crash lands. And there's a couple of aliens that have to get integrated and baptized if they want to stay.
That's got everything. Time travel.
It has everything.
Knights,
science,
swords, aliens. That sounds awesome.
It's pretty great. There's not a lot of fighting in it, but and I'm pro fighting in a book, but in this it's really, really good. And it's also kind of weirdly sad because everyone's sick.
I read a nonfiction called In the Wake of the Plague.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah. So sad.
What
it's
was
just
it?
That everyone died and they were like writing about it and they were so sad.
And so because was it a virus? Was it Ebola? Was it Ebola?
It was spread by rats. It was actually spread by fleas that are on rats.
Mm-hmm. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's
by the way
that's,
about the plague.
Yeah, they go really.
Where
deep
did it in. Start? What year was that?
Gosh, it's been a while since I read that one. I just remember it came from the east. A lot of people think the Mongol invaders kind of brought it over a little bit.
Oh, Genghis Khan. Because
they're doing their thing in around like 1240, you know?
Right.
And they're coming far into Europe and they're bringing stuff we hadn't seen or the Westerners hadn't seen. Specifically it goes into like, people pulling into like ports and it just starts, you know, like, ships. Yeah.
Someone got sick. It's like smallpox in the United States where they came to America and the Native Americans had no defense against it. So,
yeah. And they thought it was the apocalypse too, because they were very, very Christian and they had their apocalypse lore and it happened.
Look,
it's happening.
92%. How many? I mean, like literally like entire towns were wiped out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, but there's a fantastic fiction book. Have you ever heard of? We're just naming books. I hope that's okay.
That is perfect. Actually, people are just going, I have enough books, but please tell me about these books that I should be reading one
but
day.
But I never get to talk about this.
Right, exactly. So it's the best.
Yeah, my girlfriend, who's not as much into this stuff, sits impatiently, enjoys listening to me talk about it, and
there
then
you go.
Almost nobody else. And you,
that
Jackie,
is why,
you
and
do.
That is why you love her.
That's right.
Because she's there for you.
That's right. The book is called The Years of Rice and Salt. It's by Kim Stanley Robinson, who wrote the excellent Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars sci-fi series. He wrote a book. I thought this was in my top five books I've ever read. Basically, it says, what if instead of wiping out most of Europe, the Black Plague wiped out all of Europe? And then it's an alternate history. What if Islam and China
just kept moving,
owned the world? And what would that world look like? So you've got like Chinese explorers in the Incas fighting the Incas in Peru. You've got like, you've got like the women's movement in Islam-controlled Paris, you know, area like in the 70s.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It goes through the entire history up until modern day. And another thing that's really wild about it is that the way it does this is like each section is like a different time period, right? Because he wants to keep hopping forward.
Oh, right.
But it's the same, quote, characters, unquote, because they keep going back to the bardo and being reincarnated
till
they can learn their lesson, you know?
That is awesome.
It's very cool, and it
the
made me cry.
The Years of Rice and Salt.
It made me cry.
Okay.
It's very moving, yeah. And it's kind of how justice and freedom are the same. No matter who you are, what your skin color is, what your creed or your religion is, justice, freedom, the
humanity
ability to love
exactly.
who you want to love, all of that is the same always, 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 always.
Right. It's not always going to be a blonde guy with blue hair.
Yeah.
Well, that's backwards.
It sounds trite the way I say it, the way Kim Stanley Robinson says it. It's a profound meditation.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's... That is great. I'm pro that.
Yeah.
That's,
I read a lot of great sci-fi. I read a lot of great fiction and nonfiction, but like, I like something that gets a message that profound. That's rare. I think that's rare.
And it's one of the things that fiction can do that nonfiction feels like it can't.
It can't quite, right? I mean,
it's supposed to be journalistic. It's supposed to be, objective.
You have to come to the conclusion on your own. And for whatever reason, a lot of times it won't affect you emotionally, you know, the way a fictional story would. Yeah.
Right. But the in the wake of the plague. That's just a horrible story, and you're like, I am emotionally devastated.
There is emotion in that book because you're getting the accounts of the people. They're writing in the first person, like, this is what happened to us.
Are they from letters and from...
Letters and, just the accounts. And, of course, it's, like, scattered and, you know, spotty. But, you know, he finds a lot of good sources that really kind of make you go, oh, now I get it. Now I get what happened.
Right, because like in Eiffelheim, what the guy is using as source material in this fiction book is essentially the ledgers of the church.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the deaths of the different people. And the guy also has like a journal of some sort, which they may or may not have had, right?
Yeah.
Because paper being very expensive at the time.
Yeah.
And my dad was telling me about some book that is also, a small documentary like on PBS or something about the invention of the press, led to the invention of glasses.
Oh, sure,
and
yeah.
Why wouldn't it? You know, people got to read. And you're like, oh, I can't see that. And so that led to the telescope, which led to, of course, gay marriage.
The telescope to gay marriage in seven moves by Jackie Cation.
Exactly. It's I play chess.
Yeah.
I don't play chess. Do you play chess?
No. Well, not well.
I have.
Not well.
I have played chess. No. Not well at all. I don't know what I'm doing. I know how each of the pieces move. And if you know less than me, I might win.
I'm more of a Magic the Gathering guy. Actually, more of a Hearthstone guy, if you know Hearthstone.
Oh, you going Hearth, or is it spelled Hearth?
It's spelled Hearth. Yeah, it's an online version of Magic the Gathering.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guess what I just bought?
What you got?
We've weeded off briefly, but allow me to tell you that I, Chris Mancini of Comedy Film Nerds, who I just did a show with them, he told me you can buy the first six Final Fantasy Legend games.
Yeah.
The first six Final Fantasy games for the iPod, for your iPhone or for the iPad. $70. For the first.
And you just can play them on a plane?
Yeah, you can play them on a plane. Yeah, I was like, well, thank you for taking over my life, clearly.
You've got some epic adventures to engage in.
Yeah. I started the first one today. I've already played it for an hour and a half. Hello and welcome, November.
That's awesome.
Oh, I know it. I'm pretty excited about it.
And we're not off topic because it's all vaguely medieval.
Right. There's swords.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of swords.
Yeah.
There's all, you know, I like that they do incorporate a lot of, people romanticize the Middle Ages so much.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, there's a bunch of romance novels that I read, I think, in high school or that there's like, did you ever read you probably heard of it, The Time Traveler's Wife?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I never read it because on the back of The Time Traveler's Wife, there was a New York Times review that said, this is so unique, this premise. Someone, a love story where a guy travels through time. And,
yeah.
And you're like, nope. Nope, there's walls and walls of that crap at the Paperback Exchange in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's an entire genre, right?
Diana Gabaldon.
Is that who wrote The Time Traveler's Wife?
No, Diana Gabaldon is this huge series called Outlander.
Oh, right, that's the new series that everyone's like, you would love that. You love Scotland, you love romance novels, you love time travel.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'll look at it. But here's my least favorite thing in... done when it's done in prose and it's done for no other reason than to tell me that everyone has an accent is when they put a lot of
apostrophes
and smash. And I'm like, just tell me what they're saying. Just tell me what they're saying. Just saying with a strong Irish brogue, with a strong Scottish brogue.
Dialect in prose, dialect in fiction is so hard to pull off.
It's maddening. You got to use it sparingly, my friends.
Yeah.
It's like adverbitis. You start sprinkling adverbs all over the place. I do it with commas because I don't know where commas go. Mm-hmm. I use them as breath marks.
Sure.
And
I need to do that with my heavy breathing.
I know.
Nothing but commas.
You haven't been having heavy breathing since, I think it was before you were allowed to speak.
Oh, don't worry. It'll happen again.
Oh, fair enough. Something to look forward to, people. Uh-huh. I don't have any chocolate. I got you some gummy bugs and some gummy fangs.
You know what? I'm going to try one right now, but I got to say, I'm a little worried. I'm thinking of wax lips when I look at them, and I don't want to bite into some wax lips.
They're not wax lips.
They're not like that
gummies
at all, right?
They're like gummy bears, but we give away pencils, which make us the worst people to give away things on Halloween. But what we also...
Why do you do pencils?
Well, because Andy likes the idea of a pencil and a skull eraser. It's kind of fun.
That's cool.
He spends a fair amount of money on tiny toys.
Yeah.
And I was like, can we please give out some kind of candy? And so he was like, can we give out gummy fangs and gummy bugs? And I was like, yeah, those are people will be psyched, right?
Sure.
Children love us. And we 110 kids, 4 babies.
And, there we go. Oh yeah, I saw your tweet that you'd had 110 kids. That's amazing. Yeah,
very blue collar.
That's a fun Halloween.
Yeah.
In New York, nobody comes to my second floor apartment. You know,
right? That's it. I mean, this is very much a house.
It's a beautiful little
neighborhood track house.
Here.
Sure, it's adorable.
All right, here we go.
You can eat
gummy
a fly.
Bug. I'm eating a fly.
Gummy bug. Step away from the microphone so that one guy who hates the chili.
Sorry, buddy. Nom, 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 nom. Oh, it tastes good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's chewier than I thought, but it tastes good.
Yeah, well. What are you gonna do?
I love it.
Here's my current stack of to read.
Your book pile is a literal book pile.
It's a pile of books. Have you read The Last Unicorn by Peter Beagle?
I've only seen the old cartoon that makes you feel kind of weird.
Oh, really? There's a cartoon?
There's a cartoon film.
What I should do is I should read the Cliff Notes, and then I will be able to... Because I, sadly, am a big skimmer and then a rereader.
Yeah.
I like to get to the meat. Let's find happens. What happens at the end of it? And then I reread it again, and I'm like, oh, that also happened.
Rereading is so nice.
I love reading.
I never would ever do it, and then I finally started doing it like in the last couple of years where I would go, hey, man, I really could.
What are your favorite rereads?
The Lord of the Rings, you know.
Oh, sure.
So I just reread that. Then I hadn't read it since I was in high school or something.
I read it every year or so, though I haven't. That's not true anymore because I haven't read it in over a year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you know, yeah, there's other stuff. You'll know when it's time again. And then,
I will.
Yeah, Great Gatsby, I reread. I've read that a couple times. And you know,
I read To Kill a Mockingbird. I reread that a lot. Have you read that?
No, I've never read To Kill a Mockingbird.
First of all, pretty easy read. Assigned to kids in junior high.
Sure.
Second of all, one of the greatest stories in the world. Very sweet, very sad, very smart. And it's just about a decent person.
Yeah.
Who is in a town.
Is in a not decent society, right?
Right. In a less than great society.
Yeah.
And you'll like it because there's some tragedy.
I'm going to check it out. You know, I thought about, you know, why I like the medieval and the Renaissance stuff.
Yeah.
And it's because, this is right off what you're saying, which is that I grew up like in very religious, like country, like surroundings, you know?
Where?
In West Virginia.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
And my grandfather was a farmer and a Pentecostal minister and a miner.
Wow.
He was a triple threat.
And clearly nothing pays really well.
Right. Yeah,
so I'm going to get a third job.
So, yeah. So it's just like, it's kind of like when I read about how religious the people in Europe were in like 1197, I'm like, I get it. I get it.
I get it. This was sent to me by this great lady. We did a little bit of a trade, and it's Cara Bean at badgigi.com, CARABEAN. And she is an art teacher, and she sent me her three graphic novels, Mrs. Bean's Art Class, Ms. Bean's Art Class, sorry. And this is adorable, actually.
That's cool.
Andy's read all three of them. I've only read the Art Class one, and it's great. It's essentially.
She's so good.
Yeah, she's really good. And then she's a couple, you know, fully published, but less. It's all black and white, but they're really sweet and smart.
Where is she out of?
I think it's I sent her a DVD because she was like, I want to send you this. And I was like, do you? And and so I'm glad she did. It was great. But so I think I sent her like a book. I mean, I don't know what I sent her, a bookmark, something. I tried to send something back because if you know, somebody sends you something, you should at least send them a thank you card. And so...
Cringe, an anthology of embarrassment is really cool. This cover just shows a guy walking to a classroom, and then an anthology of embarrassment is over where his exposed junk would be.
God don't make no junk.
But it looks really cool. It looks really hilarious.
Right. And then, she wrote that. And then, of course, I don't know why this Wonder Woman is in there. Why not? Because it's the comic books. I never put them on my reading list.
Yeah.
Because they only take 20 minutes to read.
I read some of this Azzarello run. I didn't get to volume 4 of it, but it was good.
This should be 3 because I'm done after.
That's 4.
That's 4.
It says 4.
Oh, then I have to tell my pull list people to stop. Because I like the first 3. I'm good.
That happens with me in comics. I go off of comics for a long time sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
Just because I feel like I get a little bit of fatigue where I'm like, oh, this again. And then the second I start reacting that way, I'm like, well, I guess it's not fun anymore, so it's time to stop. And then you know what? I come back 3 years later, and I'm hardcore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have such a stack of comics right now that it's been really – but Unwritten is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Unwritten is one of my – and there was a lot. There was a bad patch where nothing was happening.
Yeah.
But we're back in it now.
Yeah.
Mike Carey has risen to the occasion again.
Yeah.
But there was probably 6 issues where you're like, What's going on?
Yeah.
Mike, are you at a loss?
Feel free to
go on hiatus for a minute.
He's doing an epic, you know, those epics.
He really is.
Maybe he's building something he's going to knock down later and blow your mind.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's going to, because he does always have an end. Like, did you read why him?
No, that was Brian Vaughn. I read Lucifer, though. Did you read Lucifer?
I did read Lucifer. Lucifer's one of the best.
Dude, it is so epic.
It's epic.
Epic. And it's like destroying universes epic.
Yeah, like amazing. My favorite way to describe Lucifer, I was like, it's essentially Lucifer is sick of God's ineffable plan. And so he leaves hell and he's like, I don't want to be part of it. And he gets out. And then about 7 or 8 issues in, God goes, oh, you leaving? That was part of my ineffable plan.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to do that. It's essentially your little brother just wandering around going, no, I knew you were going to do that. No, I knew you're, or your big brother or whatever. And I was like, and so finally he has to go, I'm creating my own. I'm getting out of your universe.
Yeah.
Your universe blows. I'm sick of it. Even though you do a nice sunset. Because it's funny, right? It's also smart and funny.
Oh, yeah. Very funny.
Yeah, which is my favorite thing. If something's going to be super dark, I want it to be funny. Like Lock and Key. Did you read Joe Hill's?
Excellent.
Yeah, also an excellent.
Yeah,
and dark.
And when he creates his own universe, it's so good. It's
and
so
beautiful.
Good. And how it evolves, like his world evolves, and he doesn't predict everything that would happen in his own world. It's like very cool.
Oh, this was a gift too. The Wilder Life. This was a woman gave this to me. She wrote this. Wendy McClure. Thoughtful, hilarious. I couldn't put it down. Gretchen Rubin, author of The Happiness Project, says. And The Wilder Life is my adventures in the lost world of Little House on the Prairie. I wanted to have her on the show because she loves Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
Enough to have written this nonfiction book about Laura
Ingalls. Just about being into Little House on the Prairie.
She's from Chicago, Wendy McClure. And she has been to all, because it's in Wisconsin, the Wilder stuff. And I'm from Wisconsin. So I really want to read this. I just haven't been able to get to it. There's
so
many things I want to get to.
Yeah, Wendy, I'll be in Chicago soon. Come say hi.
That's it. Are you in Chicago this month? Or
no, it'll be end of right after Christmas.
Zanies,
Rosemont, 26th of December.
There you go. At Jared Logan, folks.
At Jared
See
Logan.
It. See
yeah,
it.
Get
this
it.
This one Will Anderson gave me. Will Anderson, Australian comic. And it is a story of sexual scandals in the Australian Football League.
Oh, wow. I need to be reading more books like this. Books that are so far out of my normal comfort zone or interest zone.
Yeah.
I bet it would inform everything. My comedy, how I see the world. I bet I'd be like, oh, that's like that Australian footballer who, you know.
right.
They would understand so many things. Like, one thing about being a dork on something is that, you know, it's awesome and you get all this deep level of knowledge on something, but then it's like, why not, like, just go, hey, man, it's time to read Night Games, you know?
Right, Night Games, which I haven't been able to start either, but that's by Anna Kreen, K-R-I-E-N, Sex, Power, and Sport. You know how foreigners just refer to it as sport?
Sport.
No plurals.
Do you go out for sport?
Yeah, do you go out for sport?
I signed up for sport.
Oh, which sport? You know.
The sport that we play.
The sport that we play.
Yeah.
It's very silly. So what informs you about the Middle Ages? I mean, the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, it has to inform everything you do as well, right?
Sure. Well, you know, it's all about how people, improved themselves. You know, they stopped just believing what they were told eventually and started becoming free thinkers, you know,
Well, they were handed a weirdo task in the beginning of it all, that first crusade.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Was the Dark Ages were the Middle Ages before the first crusade?
They're kind of during, you know.
Yeah.
Some people want to put the Dark Ages like a little earlier than the Middle Ages. Some people think the Dark Ages is an offensive term.
Oh, are
they
offended?
Were not actually dark, like we said, you know, in Islamic world, they were making innovations, you know?
Right.
So,
right. They were only dark ages if you happened to live in Germany
I love the idea of someone who gets offended by the use of the dark ages. That is someone who I can hang out with.
That is an academic moment. That
I
is
disagree,
someone,
but
that,
yes.
That is an academia kind of committee meeting that you can have with you and your other PhD students. And I don't give a shit. Hope it all works out for you.
Let's make a policy. Let's make it university policy not to call it that in the department.
Yes, please.
So, the real, the sweet spot for the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages is like, 1100.
Okay.
Like 1200, right in there,
That's
when you're really talking about knights and castles and horses and, that right. kind of thing. Yeah.
And not a lot of, and more just outlandery kind of, punching of each other and not a lot of reading.
Right. Because by the time you get to like 1415, you've got like the Battle of Agincourt, know what I mean? And like that's where they say things start changing. Magna Carta is in the 1200s.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's like right in the middle of them Middle Ages. Yeah.
Okay.
But the Battle of Agincourt, like that's where it stopped being all about having heavy armor and big swords and started being like all these peasant archers.
Oh.
Win the battle,
right?
Like
on foot,
yeah.
Behind all the
Nobility, forget years of training, your entire life.
Right,
this guy's good with a bow and arrow.
Right, he's got a stick, and he's just gonna ping.
And he's like, "Go, blimey, I'm gonna put one through your eyes and make you poop."
Right, right. It is a lot more egalitarian once you can kill somebody at a distance.
Right,
and there's catapults or trebuchets or whatever,
and the weapon costs, one eighth of what it costs to get armor and everything.
Yeah.
It costs even less than that. It's like a cheap, reproducible weapon. So, by the time you get into 1400s, that's like one of the things that's starting to turn it into the Renaissance or the modern era.
When was gunpowder brought to Europe? Any idea?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. I think that they actually had stuff in the 1300s and maybe even a little bit in the 1200s.
Okay.
Very, very simple cannon and stuff like that. And you don't get like a gun until, the 1500s.
1500s.
Yeah, I think. And this is... I'm not a historian or a historical professor, and I want to give that caveat, and I apologize for calling it the Dark Ages.
It's okay. Ross Thomas will write me a long, informative tale of all the correct terms.
Good,
won't you,
good.
Ross? Come on.
Will you please forward it to me?
Because Jackie@jackiecation.com.
I am sincerely interested in reading it. Yeah.
No, I usually forward when I get email from people, and people do send me stuff, I usually forward it to the guest.
Yeah,
just
good.
Just so you can see it, yeah.
Oh, any kind of response. Are you kidding?
You're
someone cared about something I said?
Someone cared about my dorkdom?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. I got a lot of talk from Diva Zappa's knitting episode. There was like, that's interesting that she doesn't care when she drops a stitch. I love the idea of that. Or, no, when she drops a stitch, she should undo it. Undo, redo.
And, wow.
Yeah, two different schools of thought on the whole dropping of the stitch. Diva Zappa, that's the way it was meant to be, man.
Yeah, and this is so interesting. Like somebody can be like that into something, and then someone else can be like, boring,
Right, right. But the greatest thing about the Dork Forest is that there is no boring. Everybody's just on board.
That's
anyway,
right.
Jared Logan, thank you so much for doing the show.
Oh, it's been a blast.
Yeah, it's over. That's the weirdest thing about it.
Oh, I'm
sad. The typewriter episode, I just got an email from a guy who said, that guy could have talked about, because Jesse Case talked about typewriters for like 40 minutes and then only had 15 minutes to talk about World War II. And he's like, why don't you just do another episode with him? Because it was starting to get really interesting. And I was like, I'll have him back. But yes, at Jared Logan is your Twitter handle. Also on Facebook, jaredlogan.com
and
is
can I mention,
the website. Please.
I have an album. It just came out from A Special Thing Records, My Brave Battle. Guys,
get it.
It's real good. I'm really proud of it.
And genuinely smart, funny, sweet, awesome, good comedy. Thanks a lot for listening, folks. Rangers, take care of each other out there. Bye.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?